Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, February 18th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Oil Companies Set Their Sights Abroad. As Permian inventory thins and prices lag, producers test new zones around the globe. By Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. In the mid-1980s, as oil prices languished, oil producers turned their attention from the Permian Basin to international opportunities. The shale revolution brought them back to the Permian, as production soared to over 6 million barrels a day. Today, with oil prices again languishing and the Permian's core Tier 1 inventory being drilled up, operators are again looking internationally. Andrew McCon, research director at Enverus, estimates large-cap companies on average have about 7.5 years of high-quality inventory. Inventory that could generate 10% returns when West Texas Intermediate is below $50 a barrel. Small and mid-cap companies have an average of 2.5 years of such inventory left. But if oil prices rise to $60 a barrel, that inventory rises to about 10.5 years for large-cap companies and 6 to 6.5 years for small and mid-cap companies. As oil prices increase, that opens up inventory, explained Sean Stewart, principal analyst at Enverus. In the Permian, operators are testing the Avalon, Harkey Sand, Barnett, Woodford, and even deeper Wolfcamp C and D benches, he told the Reporter Telegram. The question is the quality, and will it compete with other inventory? What returns will it generate, he said. Investors continue to want operators to generate returns, he said. Another development driving operators to eye international opportunities is prices, he said. Over the last 12 months, the price paid in the Permian Basin has increased rapidly. Yet another question is how much appetite operators have for international assets. The Permian Basin will be a priority for a long time, Stewart said. Companies are looking for any opportunity. They have to balance the cost of the acquisition with the potential quality of the inventory. Inventory will remain the focus, he added. Oil price levels are an important component of the inventory search, as companies weigh their willingness to push boundaries in mergers or acquisitions, he said. If prices are lower, it's harder to justify exploration spending on new zones because budgets are so tight. Higher prices give them more flexibility. Enverus Intelligence Research recently released its Global Exploration Outlook, examining early signals of renewed upstream exploration activity. While global exploration and appraisal activity in 2025 remained near historic lows, long lead indicators such as block awards, new country entries, and increased seismic surveying point to a gradual recovery forming from a very low base. Despite depressed activity levels, exploration success rates have held steady in the 30% to 40% range, underscoring a continued focus on prospect high grading, capital discipline, and risk-weighted exploration strategies, EIR analysts found. Supermajors and national oil companies are leading the exploration recovery, particularly in acquiring new acreage in regions where subsurface potential for giant discoveries is matched by above-ground conditions that support faster project advancement. Independent and junior explorers are increasing participation, signaling broader industry re-engagement beyond supermajors and national oil companies. This article is entitled, 7 Brew Opens Third Midland Drive-Thru Coffee Stand, by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Midlanders now have another drive-thru coffee stand where they can find up to 20,000 unique combinations, energy drinks, smoothies, and more. 7 Brew officially opened its doors to customers on January 26th with a ribbon-cutting ceremony. The third stand is located at 6407 State Highway 158, a fast-growing development area near the Costco. Midland and Odessa love 7 Brew, and we knew that coming in, said Chloe Bryant, new stand developer for 7 Brew Coffee. So we have this set expectation, what Midland and Odessa know us for, and we're just trying to replicate that and open up another store. She added that now Midlanders won't have to drive across town to get their favorite drink. We are replicating that same stand feel. It's just closer to some of our customers' homes, Bryant said, who added that the stand's location was chosen because it is a fast-growing development area in Midland. There's only a few places to shop right now, but we know it was going to be a big market, she explained. We love nothing more than to give back to our customers, so we wanted to be in an area where our customers could easily access us and other shops that they love. Bryant said the community has had positive feedback for the new location since they opened, adding that the team has been grateful for their support. They have all shown love and have shared our posts on Facebook and all the other social media platforms, she said. I think they're really excited that they can finally drive like 2 minutes away from their homes or get a cup of coffee on their way to work that doesn't take them out of their route. 20,000 drink combos. 7 Brew's coffee menu includes the 7 original drinks, such as the Blondie and the Sweet and Salty, as well as the classics, such as a latte or cappuccino. The menu also includes energy drinks, smoothies, shakes, teas, lemonades, and more. However, the company states that there are up to 20,000 different drink combinations for customers at the coffee stands. Bryant said that the 7 Brew team also works to create a positive experience and environment for customers. We're all about cultivating kindness and making our customers feel loved and cared for through the drinks that we offer. 7 Brew is such a fun, bubbly environment that you aren't just sitting at a drive-thru. You're always going to leave with an experience, and we want that to be a great one. If customers are looking for recommendations, Bryant has shared some of her favorites. Avid coffee drinkers may like the Smooth 7, which has Irish cream and white chocolate in it. Those looking for something sweet and flavorful, but not overly sweet, may like Sweet and Salty, which has salted caramel and white chocolate. If you prefer energy drinks, Bryant said Cocoa Berry, which has raspberry and coconut, is her favorite. Ribbon cutting. The newest 7 Brew in town opened its doors on January 26th amid a winter storm that shut down much of Midland. The coffee stand celebrated its opening with a ribbon cutting ceremony, which included a donation to the Midland Fair Havens. We're excited to continue expanding 7 Brew's upbeat drive-through atmosphere in Texas and within the Midland community, said Zach Cockman, 7 Brew Midland Director of Franchisees. We can't wait to show our guests all that 7 Brew has to offer and cultivate kindness through our partnership with the Midland Fair Havens team. Striving to be a strong community advocate, 7 Brew donated $1,500 to Midland Fair Havens. Representatives in attendance received the donation from 7 Brew. We are so deeply touched that the 7 Brew coffee team thought of our ministry to partner with. This could not be accomplished without joining hands across our community with partners such as 7 Brew Coffee, said Diane Cole Wigman, Executive Director of MFH. This generous 7 Brew Coffee donation towards Midland Fair Havens means a great deal to us. She added that the donation allows them to help determined single mothers break generational cycles of homelessness, abuse, poverty, and hardship, enabling them to reach their goals of self-sufficiency and independence. The new Seven Brew is open from 5:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. daily. Bryant said the new location is currently hiring and that applications are available online. This article is entitled City OKs Land Vacations to Expand Road. TxDOT wants to ease one-way frontage traffic along Interstate. By Luke Diaz, staff writer. Two patches of land were approved for vacation and abandonment to make way for a right-of-way just south of Industrial Loop West. The owner of both patches of land, Melanie Martinez, no longer needs the area and is working with Dunaway Associates to relinquish it. The patch measures 0.414 and 0.181 acres, respectively. The city hopes to use them to expand Otis Road, which intersects with Industrial Loop West north of the larger tract and south of the smaller tract. This is a portion of a right-of-way that's needed to allow for an east-west package road north of I-20, said Assistant City Manager Jose Ortiz. As TxDOT moves forward into construction, having this road that goes east and west will give constituents a better way to get back and forth, now that the service roads on the north side of I-20 have been converted from two-way to one-way. This will help that two-way traffic flow in that region and the north and south vacation of that right-of-way. There's no benefit to having that right-of-way anymore, so it makes sense for us to vacate this portion here so that we can secure the east-west portion. Approval of the vacation of the 0.414 acre tract is conditional upon dedication of a 1.078 acre tract just west of it, which is owned by Endeavor Energy Resources. This article is entitled Council Defers Park Restroom Deal. Midland city leaders seek cheaper local contracts for facility purchase. By Luke Diaz, staff writer. The City of Midland has deferred the purchase and installation of a new restroom facility at Sparks Park after the cost came in at $275,000, which Council Member-at-Large John Burkholder believes to be too steep of a price. I was on Realtor.com today, and I see a Bed and Bow home that's 1,584 square feet that is $300,000, and this restroom with all of this contingency is just $25,000 less, the council member said. So we had some conversation, Jose Ortiz and I, about potentially being able to look at some other contractors. Under the $275,000 price tag, the facility was intended to be purchased from Restroom Facilities LTD via the buy board purchase system. With the existing restroom being in very poor condition, the city has determined a new restroom is needed to bring it up to the standards of other restrooms around Midland's parks. The facility will be a modular restroom, also known as a prefabricated or industrialized restroom, meaning it will be delivered as a completed structure and will only need to be set in place, saving installation costs, such as only plumbing and electrical will be needed to be completed during that process. Other parks with such restrooms include Ulmer, Dennis the Menace, Dunnigan, and Hogan Parks. The existing restroom would be demolished during the new one's installation, with the demolition costs being covered in the price tag. Despite this cost-saving measures, Burkholder believes that it should be possible to get a cheaper deal done for a similar restroom, citing how the buy board process works. In past city council meetings, Burkholder has championed using the city's purchasing system to hire local contractors. Sometimes there may be only one person on buy board that's responding to a request, and even buy board sometimes doesn't have the best deals for us, he said. This really brings up a bigger conversation on just being able to bring in more of these commercial contractors that are out there in the community that can build these things for us locally, just to get some more bidding. Even if we come in at $25,000 less to even 50% less on these are dollars that we'll be able to further stretch into other projects. Midland City Council, in agreement with Parks and Recreation Director Laurie Williams, agreed to defer the item and try to find less expensive contracts than the one with restroom facilities. The new restroom is expected to be completed sometime later this year. This article is entitled, County Considers Sale of Former Gem Mineral Society Site, by B. K. Richter, staff writer. Midland County Commissioners are set to hold a special meeting 10:30 a.m. Thursday, February 19th in the Commissioners' Courtroom, 500 North Lorraine Street. On the docket is the potential sale of property the county owns. The property is located at 801 North Fort Worth Street, which is the former site of the building used to house the Midland Gem and Mineral Society. Due to issues with asbestos, officials from the Midland Gem and Mineral Society donated the building to the county directly. In 2008, club members accepted the conditional deed for the Clarence Scarborough House property for the organization's home. Commissioners will go into executive session Thursday and will take action regarding the sale. This article is entitled EIA, U.S. Natural Gas to Hit Records in 26-27. Permian, Appalachia, and Haynesville to Dominate Production, by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Natural gas marketed production is forecast to reach record highs in 2026 and 2028, according to a government forecast. In its February short-term energy outlook, the Energy Information Administration forecasts U.S. natural gas marketed production will average a record 120.8 billion cubic feet per day in 2026 and set another record in 2027, reaching 122.3 BCF per day. Approximately 69% of that expected production will come from three regions: the Permian, Appalachia, and Haynesville. Growth in the Permian will lead, growing by 1.4 BCF per day in 2026 and 600 million cubic feet per day in 2027. In the Permian region, growth in natural gas production is primarily the result of associated gas produced during oil production. We estimate that oil-directed rig activity in the Permian will be relatively low as West Texas intermediate prices fall from $65 per barrel in 2025 to average $53 per barrel in 2026 and then average $49 per barrel in 2027. Despite these lower prices, we estimate that increases in gas-to-oil ratio, GOR, will drive natural gas production growth in the Permian region. We expect the GOR to continue its steady increase in the Permian, EIA analysts wrote. Production in the Haynesville will rise 1.2 BCF per day in 2026 and an additional 1.6 BCF per day in 2027, supported by relatively elevated natural gas prices, EIA analysts report. We expect prices to rise from $3.52 per million British thermal units, MMBTU, in 2025 to $4.31 MMBTU in 2026 and to $4.38 MMBTU in 2027, which allows drilling in the Haynesville region to remain economical, even with relatively deeper and more expensive well development. In addition, the Haynesville's proximity to liquefied natural gas, LNG, export terminals and major industrial natural gas consumers along the U.S. Gulf Coast draws operators to the region, analysts explained. Additional capacity from the Mountain Valley Pipeline will allow the Appalachia region to grow 300 million cubic feet per day in 2026 and 500 million cubic feet per day in 2027. In recent years, the Appalachia region has provided the largest share of U.S. domestic natural gas output, accounting for around 32% of U.S. lower 48 states production annually since 2016. Production growth has slowed in recent years because of pipeline capacity constraints, analysts wrote. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's authorization of operations on the Mountain Valley Line in June 2024 eased those constraints. This article is entitled, "Hotshots is Cleared to Renew Alcohol License." City Council ratifies removal of peace officers requirement at bar. By Luke Diaz, staff writer. Midland City Council has officially ratified the removal of the peace officers requirement at the Hot Shots Bar, ending its long saga in getting approval of a specific use designation to sell alcohol with no strings attached. SUDs are one of two approvals a business must have to sell alcohol on their premises in Midland, the other being a Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, TABC, certification. Businesses looking to receive an SUD must file for one through the city, after which it is then taken up by Midland's Planning and Zoning Commission, and then by Midland City Council. SUDs are valid for a two-year period, and businesses need to reapply around when this period ends to continue selling alcohol. If they fail to renew their SUD, but continue selling alcohol, they will be fined $1,500 a day. In the past year, numerous bars have had to go through an SUD renewal process after an audit by the city found many businesses around Midland had SUDs coming up for renewal, and even some with expired approvals. Hot Shots was one of those businesses. Hot Shots SUD expired in 2005. While the city is usually supposed to give businesses notices that their SUD is expiring, it neglected to do so for Hot Shots and Chin, in turn neglected to follow up on renewing the SUD. As a result, Chin and his business were heavily impacted financially. He had to stop operations for 43 days because nobody had told him he was out of compliance, Chin's attorney Patrick H. Cordero Jr. told the reporter Telegram. They didn't have any income. Chin eventually realized the situation after complaints were filed by Hot Shots' neighbor BTA Oil Producers regarding people parking in the latter's lot. Due to being unfamiliar with city operations, Chin hired Cordero to help him through the SUD process. Dave's not a lawyer, he's a bar owner, Cordero said. These things are not within his wheelhouse, but that is within mine, and so I was able to explain to the council our position a little bit better than he might be able to do so. Chin went through the SUD process starting in April 2025, leading to the SUD officially being approved on June 10th. However, a series of incident reports collected by the city concerning parking issues and serious crimes made the situation far more complicated. 5 years ago, we noticed a really large increase in drug activity, people over-consuming, and property damage, said Trey Fuqua, a business partner for BTA, in April. That prompted us to install 24/7 cameras and our own peace officers. What they've shown us is that there's a really scary pattern of folks exiting Hot Shots and then either coming down our alley or on our property, and illegal activity occurring. Fuqua did not respond to requests for comment for this article. City staff verified incidents of severe violence throughout the SUD process. In one instance, a woman was punched repeatedly in a parking lot behind Hot Shots in the early morning hours of July 17th, which was recorded by security cameras from other businesses. The video has not been shared publicly, but has been seen by several members of city staff, who described being horrified by the footage. "It made me ill, like really ill, to watch a woman just get beat," said Councilmember Amy Stretcher Burks in August. Cordero, however, believes that the number of incidents is an exaggeration and is convinced that a bad agent, whom he declined to specify, deliberately inflated the incident reports, particularly after the SUD was granted in June with the peace officer requirement. "When we compared what our incidents are to bars like ours, our incidents were much less than everybody else in the area," he said. "We were in line with all the other bars in town and just had somebody that was particularly concerned and making complaints. And that's how we got here." City staff confirmed that incident reports can be accidentally inflated for several reasons. This includes situations when a single incident is called in by multiple people, ones where an incident from one bar spills over into another due to the proximity between them, and ones where a crime ends up briefly coming into the area but otherwise has nothing to do with the bar, such as reports of speeding. City staff also said that they have vetted numbers as much as possible to prevent this kind of inflation, such as striking police patrols from the numbers. In January, Cordero shared data that show that there are fewer incident reports at Hot Shots and its neighboring bars than at other bars around Midland. Rock and Rodeo was passed with absolutely no restrictions, but when we went through the first process, they have over 100 calls. "More than all three of us combined," said Carly Smith, a co-owner of Double Bar Saloon, during its own SUD process. City staff's report shows that from June 2025 to January 2026, there were 20 incidents reported at Hot Shots, four of which involved physical violence, compared to Double Bar Saloon with 24 incidents and the bar with 10. Meanwhile, between January and July 2025, there were 36 incidents reported at Hot Shots. After viewing police reports ahead of the January meeting, Chin told council he believes the 20-incident figure is actually closer to 9. "There are incidents that are moved outside, handled outside, and usually squashed instantly." Tyler Norton, who says that he occasionally does DJ work for Hot Shots on weekends at the January meeting. "The bar staff are always vigilant, walking around, checking on people. There's times when I see Dave walk around the bar about 4 or 5 times checking on people. Very rarely have I seen PD come around. I came from Austin 5 years ago, and on 6th Street, there were shootings all the time. This place has nothing like that." As the result of these incidents at the bar, City Council opted to add a requirement to have peace officers stationed at Hot Shots, despite Chin already having his own security, and the fact that this would put additional financial strain on Hot Shots. There were also 2 different review periods set in place, one in August, after 2 months of peace officers, and another in January, after 7 months. Hot Shots also took the liberty of other methods to dissuade people from parking on BTA's property. They told their clients not to use that parking lot anymore, leased a new area across the street from Frost Bank, and then shut the door that was in the alley that faced BTA's building, Cordero said. They also had lights that shined out to the parking lot. They turned those off in hopes that people would not be encouraged to use that parking. "There were cameras, but we upgraded them, so they're now all infrared 360. When I had to get police officers, that really hurt me bad," Chin said in January. "My business went down so bad. I don't have any pool players anymore, you know, and there's really not anything going on in my bar. There's no violence or anything. That's all happening outside. Just because it's around my area and my building, they deduct a point for me when I don't even know it's outside. In addition to hot shots, Double Bar also had to shut down for a time and was forced to implement peace officers until recently. Ahead of its SUD review, Cordero said he contacted Double Bar. I did speak to one of the owners of the Double Bar early on, because this was coming down the pipeline, he recalled. They knew they were going to get the requirement because the city can't just single hot shots out. Everybody in that area was going to be subject to whatever we had to do. While the review in August did not inspire confidence in the city, by January, City Council reviewed all of the data and concluded that hot shots no longer needed police officers. This appeared to be briefly complicated when BTA filed another complaint about parking in between this ruling and the finalization of the peace officer removal. But this did not end up changing the result. With the peace officers removed, Cordero is now optimistic about operations returning to normal at Hot Shots. It was an overreaction at first to add peace officers based on the complaints, and I think everybody calmed down since then, he said. Time will prove whether or not the council is right to allow us to just use regular security. I think it's coming upon us to be diligent and vigilant about the things that go on around us. We can't just think that we won and we can keep going. I think it's important that we continue to stay on top of things and prove to the council that they weren't wrong in trusting us to go this route. As for BTA, Cordero believes that Hot Shots has done all it can to accommodate them, and believes that they now should handle problems with parking directly with the offending individuals. Chin also indicated back in June that he and BTA had been collaborating effectively, and that BTA was satisfied with the steps Hot Shots has been taking. Trey has told me that ever since the last meeting, we've addressed the issue and we know what the problem is, Chin said at the June meeting. A lot of stuff has been eliminated already, so he's pretty happy about what's going on. He told me, June 9th, that there's nothing really going on over there. I think BTA could do something about towing cars that do go there, Cordero suggested. I think it'd only take one or two towings and people would stop, because the word would get out that you're not supposed to park there, and it would travel like wildfire. I think that would go a long way in alleviating the issues. In the wake of the peace officer requirements, City Council expressed agreement in having more consistency in granting SUDs to businesses. I do not think that we should be requiring security, essentially taxing them, when we have other top 10 bars in incident reports like Rock and Rodeo, where the SUDs have no conditions, Councilmember Jack Ladd said in January. I think we should treat everyone similarly. I do appreciate you guys going through the process, but at the same time, I don't feel like y'all should have had to go through that process, Councilmember John Norman said to Chin in January. Just like everyone else is saying, it's an establishment that's been there for a long time without any problems and things of that nature. I don't think we should make them have to do it and not do it for everyone else. When I listen to all of this, I hear consistency and increased enforcement, Mayor Lori Blong said. I think that those are things that benefit the entire community of Midland and help us to keep things fair and equitable. The decision to remove the peace officers was approved unanimously by all 7 members of City Council, including Councilmember-at-Large Robin Poole, who had originally chosen to recuse herself from voting on the matter in order to avoid a potential conflict of interest due to her husband being a BTA employee. Hot Shots' new SUD will expire on June 10, 2027. In the meantime, Hot Shots will look to continue serving its patrons, many of whom came to numerous city council meetings to show their support for Chin and his family. That goes to show you how well Dave has run his bar, Cordero said. He's probably the only person I know who's at his bar every day they're open, along with his dad, mom, and son. It's a family-owned business, and they take it seriously. They're good people, and they want people to feel very much welcomed. And the idea of putting them out of business, I call it death by a thousand cuts. Little by little, they were making them increase their expenses right to the point where they might not be viable. I think Midlanders were aware that that was going on and wanted to support Dave and his business. It's kind of dark, and you can smoke in there, so it's not for everyone. But I think they will just continue to service that community that enjoys being able to go somewhere, have a drink, shoot some pool. They've been doing it since 1999, and hopefully they keep doing it as long as they can. This is the Life Tributes column. Connie Joanne Montgomery, April 29, 1932 to February 4, 2026. Funeral services for Joanne Montgomery will be Friday, February 20th at 2 p.m. in the chapel of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home in Midland, with Bill Johnson officiating, and burial in Fairview Cemetery. A visitation will precede the services starting at 1 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welsh. Connie Joanne Montgomery was born April 29, 1932, to Cecil and Novella Adair Montgomery in Glacier, Texas. The family moved to Midland 3 years later. As a product of the Midland school system, Joanne graduated from Midland High School with the distinction of being the last Texas class with an 11-year curriculum in 1949. Joanne was preceded in death by a beloved maternal live-in grandmother, Annie Adair, both parents, and brother Bill Montgomery. Survivors include a nephew, Stephen Montgomery, of Flagstaff, Arizona, a cousin-niece, Debbie Tversky, of Canyon, Texas, as well as numerous great-nieces and nephews, and a spiritually adopted family in the Bill Johnson family of Bixby, Oklahoma. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to First Baptist Church of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. John Frank Newman, October 22, 1958 to February 3, 2026. John Frank Newman, 66, of Midland, passed away on February 3rd. Frank was born to John Taylor Newman and Margaret Speed on October 22, 1959, in Odessa. Frank graduated from Odessa High School in 1978. He owned and operated West Company of Midland before retiring to enjoy his time traveling and spending time at his ranch. Frank enjoyed photography and fishing. He is survived by wife Teresa Newman, son Taylor Newman, and sister Mitzi Shoemake. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to the American Heart Association. Pedro Aguilar. Pedro Aguilar, age 91, of Midland, passed away February 12th with his loving family at his side. A visitation will be held Tuesday, February 17th from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., with a rosary being recited at 7 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home in Midland. A funeral service will be held Wednesday, February 18th at 1 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will immediately follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral arrangements are in the care of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Cedric Deshaun Williams. Cedric Deshaun Williams, 47, of Odessa, died January 26th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. on February 17th at American Heritage Funeral Home. interment immediately following in American Heritage Cemetery. Pastor Chris Hager is officiating. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
Hello there, this is Jim, and I'll be reading from the Odessa American for February 16th, 2026. NCAA Division II adds Local Voice by Ruth Campbell. With all the changes in college sports nationwide, UTPB President Sandra Woodley says she will be an advocate for students here as chair of the NCAA Division II Executive Board. Woodley will also serve as a voting member of the NCAA Board of Governors, the association's highest governing body. Woodley added that there's a lot of issues to consider, from name, image, and likeness to lawsuits. The Division II Executive Board has 13 voting members, including 9 presidents and chancellors, 2 student athletes, and 2 independent representatives. The chair of the NCAA Division II Management Council also serves as a non-voting member of the board. Woodley can serve up to 2 terms. I've been on the D2 board for going on 4 years now, maybe a little bit longer. I was selected to represent the Lone Star Conference and D2 on that D2 board, Woodley said. She was elected vice chair of the board 2 years ago, and this is her 2nd year in that spot. They just elected me to the chair, so I'll start my first term, and I can serve up to 2 terms as chair if they so desire, Woodley said. The NCAA has a federated structure where each one of the divisions within the overall guidelines and rules of the NCAA really make their own rules to some extent, Woodley said. Those rules relate to everything from the transfer portal and eligibility rules to championships, travel partners, and schedule. Then, of course, there are some overall rules for the NCAA. The chair of the executive board for D2 and similarly for the one in D3 have representation on the overall governance structure, which is called the Board of Governors. The Board of Governors handles overall rules, strategy, and legal issues, and all of those things related to all of the NCAA, Woodley said. By virtue of my position as the executive board chair, I'll be representative for D2 on the overall governance structure as well, she said. The board looks at policies, procedures, and operation. They manage the budgets that come through and the allocations that go to the championships and for rulemaking bodies for each of the divisions. They look at strategic initiatives, how to move the division board. They will weigh in on and work on any sort of legal issues that they have right now, Woodley said. Overall, in the NCAA, there are legal challenges on name, image, and likeness, for example. There's some movement to try to make all the student athletes employees, for example. Overall, strategic directions working through the legislative process, and then also handling the rulemaking and oversight of championships and strategic initiatives in all of the operations of the NCAA sports across 500,000 athletes across the country. Indianapolis-based NCAA also works on things like student health and safety, making rules about how often you can practice, and making sure that trainers, team doctors are monitored and keep up with the latest research on the physical and mental health well-being of student athletes. Also making sure all the rules and initiatives in place focus on the overall experience of student athletes competitively in their leadership, development, and their ability to participate in NCAA sports safely. Being chair of the NCAA Division II Executive Board, she said, will benefit UTPB. I do think athletics is an important part of UTPB. It becomes an opportunity for us to recruit and retain students. Our goal here at UTPB is to do whatever we can to make sure the best and the brightest here in the Permian Basin have a place to go, a university, where they can fulfill all the things they want out of university education, Woodley said. For some students, making sure that they can participate in sports is a big thing. We want to make sure that Division II differentiation in the overall NCAA remains beneficial to our students. There are differences between Division I, particularly those large programs like the University of Texas, University of Alabama, that is different from the regional comprehensive Division II athletic program. So I think being on the board allows me to advocate for our own students here in Division II and to be a part of the overall voice of NCAA athletics to make sure that there is focus on the student athlete experience in all of our rules, policies, and procedures that we enact through the legislative process at the NCAA. Our students are like many other students in Division II programs, and we want to make sure that the focus is on them, she added. The board meets twice a year in person and at the NCAA convention in January. Then there are other virtual meetings and committee meetings throughout the year that I'll be part of. The Strategic Planning Committee and the Budget Committee is one of the responsibilities that we have, looking at how we spend our dollars and how we allocate them, and oversight into the rules and regulations, but also the strategic initiatives that they have, Woodley said. She noted that she thinks this enhances the focus on the university. Being a part of the NCAA board and having a place of leadership there, I think, really helps our university, making sure that we maintain that focus on a healthy, competitive opportunity for our students so that we can recruit them to the university, have a good experience, have and leave with those skills as they start their first career opportunity in the basin, Woodley said. And up next, Hendrick and Odessa Prevail Over TGAA by Kim Smith. The TGAA is no longer appealing an Ector County District Court ruling that its contract with the City of Odessa is void and unenforceable. Lawyers for the Texas Government Accountability Association filed a notice of withdrawal of appeal in the 11th Court of Appeals in Eastland Thursday. The attorneys did not explain the reason. According to the document, the TGAA no longer desires to appeal Judge Lon Ruiz Crutcher's December 10, 2025 decision. On April 23, 2024, the Odessa City Council, which then included Mayor Javier Hoven, unanimously gave City Manager John Breckmeyer permission to sign a contract with TGAA, which promised to help the city become more transparent and to hold the city's feet to the fire if they violated any of TGAA's tenets. City Council members Steve Thompson and Gilbert Vasquez later expressed regret for their votes, saying they did not realize Breckmeyer had a long-term relationship with Matt Armstrong, who emails showed helped negotiate the interlocal agreement between the city and TGAA, and who was also helping out on the re-election campaigns of Mayor Javier Hoven and Council members Denise Swanner and Mark Mata. When Hoven, Swanner, and Mata lost their seats in November 2024, the new council immediately voted to repudiate the contract. Mayor Cal Hendrick and the new council members Eddie Mitchell and Craig Stoker had also expressed grave concerns over the terms of the contract while campaigning. The contract did not have an end date, and while the first year of the contract was supposed to be free, after 5 years, the 20-cent rate per resident fee, $24,000 annually, could increase, and there was no limit on that increase. In addition, the contract stated the only way the city could terminate the contract was by holding an election at taxpayers' expense for citizens to determine its fate. Moreover, the contract stated that even if citizens voted to kill the contract, the city would have to pay for 2 more years. On February 7th, TGAA went to the American Arbitration Association in Dallas County seeking arbitration to stop the city from ending the contract and to get $10,000 and attorney fees. The city responded by going to Ruiz Crutcher to declare the contract unconstitutional, void, and unenforceable. The city filed a motion for partial summary judgment in September, again arguing the contract is illegal and unconstitutional. Moreover, they argued in the motion, TGAA isn't a government entity. It's privately funded by people or entities they refuse to name. Hendrick has repeatedly said a private nonprofit entity in Dallas can't strip away the rights of Odessa citizens to self-rule under the guise of transparency and ethics. He said TGAA said they were in favor of transparency, but hid from the court and the public the identities of those funding them. This was about control. The TGAA sought to control the citizens of Odessa and its leadership to decisions made behind closed doors by TGAA's Dallas-based arbitrators, Hendrick said via email following the December ruling. The court today stood up for the rights of the citizens of Odessa and rightfully found that the TGAA documents cannot stand. And up next, Master Gardeners, How Gardening with Native Plants Helps Texans Live in Rhythm with Nature by Mary Sergo. It's 2016 in Lubbock, Texas, and the sky has fallen to blanket the ground in bright white snow. Younger and disinclined to prepare for even the mildest of weather, I found myself without food in the house and hungry. After layering up in my warmest clothes, I set out on foot to the nearest grocery store. Major roads had been cleared for business, but driving out of my neighborhood wasn't in the cards, As I walked a quiet route, unencumbered by busy traffic, professional deadlines, or technological distractions, I thought to myself, shouldn't things be like this more often? In modern society, it can be difficult to distinguish necessity from symptoms of a culture of convenience. There's a balance to be struck between aligning ourselves with the rhythms of the natural world and advancing technologies that keep people safe and well. When we seek to reorient ourselves toward a more harmonious relationship with nature, gardening offers a familiar and accessible place to begin. It may feel easier to select a plant from a big box store and trust that it is well suited for the area, or to install a known invasive plant because it keeps landscapes looking tidy, even in the dead of winter. After all, explaining why a garden looks native and natural can feel harder than maintaining uniformity. That is, until those momentary conveniences compound into long-term ecological consequences. So what does it actually mean to live in better rhythm with the natural world when it comes to our gardens? For most home gardeners, it does not look like perfection. It looks like working with constraints, limited time, limited budgets, rules set by homeowners associations, unpredictable weather, a desire for beauty alongside a need for practicality. These realities are not failures of commitment. They are simply the context we garden in. In Texas, where drought, heat, and sudden cold snaps shape what survives, the most sustainable choice is often the one that works with local conditions instead of fighting with them. That might mean replacing a thirsty lawn with native ground cover over time, choosing plants that tolerate temperature swings, and allowing parts of the garden to rest through winter rather than forcing constant tidiness. Many of us were taught that a good garden is neat, evergreen, and instantly gratifying. Shifting toward native and ecological gardening asks for patience and a willingness to be a beginner again. Plants may look sparse at first, pollinators may arrive before our confidence does, and that's okay. If rethinking your garden feels overwhelming, start small. Meaningful change doesn't require a full landscape overhaul. Choose one bed, one corner, or even one container to experiment with native or well-adjusted plants. Choose one bed, one corner, or even one container to experiment with native or well-adapted plants. Allow winter to be what it is. Leave seed heads, grasses, and leaf litter in place where possible. Dormancy is not neglect, it's part of the cycle. Gardens don't exist in isolation. What we plant in our own yards influences the space around us, from neighborhood streets to shared waterways. When one person chooses native plants, pollinators benefit. When several neighbors do, entire habitat corridors begin to form. Community gardens and shared spaces turn individual choices into collective impact. This season, consider slowing down just enough to notice what your garden is asking for, rather than what culture expects it to look like. You don't have to do everything at once. Sometimes the smallest shift is enough to change the direction of a landscape. Gardening has always been a conversation between people and place. When we listen more closely, we find that harmony isn't something we invent. It's something we return to. To connect with your local Permian Basin Master Gardeners and discuss gardening in West Texas, call the AgriLife office in Odessa at 498-4071 or in Midland at 686-4700. Additional information is available at westtexasgardening.org.
This is the Dear Abby column. Single woman finds herself still drawn to her stalker. Dear Abby, I am 57 and have never been married. I have had many relationships, some good, some bad. Although in the past I experienced heartbreaks, I am now open to meeting someone new. I recently ended a relationship with Bill, a man I met at a resort casino 3 years ago. I was happy in the beginning until things started to take a turn. Because we go to the same places all the time, it was hard to break it off. I tried, but Bill would run back to me, and I always took him back, mostly because I felt guilty for hurting him. I finally ended things for good 4 months ago, after he did something very rude. A neighbor later told me that Bill was stalking me. Bill denies this, even though I have proof. Abby, I am writing because for some reason I'm still drawn to him. He's the only man in my life who ever told me he loves me. I'm afraid no one will ever love me the way he does. I know the stalking is a sign that he is mentally unwell, yet we keep bumping into each other, which has caused this pull to want to be with him. I can't afford therapy right now, so any advice you can give me to move beyond this pull I have for him would be appreciated. Signed, Heart Ruling the Head. Dear Heart, honey, if you no longer frequent the places you used to frequent together and keep running into him anyway, has it occurred to you that it's happening because he's still stalking you? If you're still going to the same places, it's time to change your routine. This troubled individual may be the only person who has said, I love you, but he won't be the last if you open yourself to other relationships. You say you can't afford therapy, but please be aware that free or low-cost counseling is available from your county's Department of Mental Health Services or a local college or university with a psychology department. Dear Abby, I've been talking to a famous pro wrestler who is having marriage problems. He has been hitting on me through Google Chat. I just want to be a supportive friend whom he can vent to. He says his wife is, quote, getting too old for him, unquote, if you know what I mean. They have a joint bank account, but he says it's frozen. He has asked me for an Apple card. I told him no, and to ask his extended family instead. Abby, I need my money to help out my brothers and sister. I prefer he be like a friend or big brother to me. I need major advice, please, because it feels like my life is going out of control. Signed, Uncertain in Idaho. Dear Uncertain, people must exercise caution when communicating with strangers online. Famous pro wrestlers usually have enough money that they aren't reduced to hitting up women they meet on the internet for Apple cards. Your life will not go out of control unless you allow it to. Regain control by ghosting and blocking this person. He's a scammer, and he, not you, should figure out his own financial problems. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.